Thank you.
The next case is McLean and Kent School District.
Good morning, Your Honor. If I could reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, I'd appreciate that. Thank you. And may it please the court, good morning. I'm Charles Lind on behalf of the Kent School District. The question in this case is before the court is whether a certificated teacher who initiates an appeal of his discharge or his non-renewal in this case pursuant to the Chapter 28A 405 RCW process, when you've done that, does that teacher then have an obligation to actively pursue his appeal, or can the teacher simply abandon the process and sit out for 1, 2, or 3 years and then return expecting to simply pick up that process where he left it off?
Well, I mean, isn't the issue really whether the King County Superior Court presiding judge erred in designating a hearing officer?
Well, I think that at the root, this is the question and why the Superior Court.
Well, procedurally, that's correct. Isn't that where we start? I mean, because there's a statute.
Right.
And it says what happens.
There's really two errors, I think, okay. Judge Chandler, that the Superior Court judge made. And one is that, first of all, the process, essentially there shouldn't have been a petition and appeal, a petition and appointment pursuant to subsection 4 of the section 310 process. That was a misuse of that procedure. That's a petition and appointment of a hearing officer when the parties cannot agree on the appointment of a hearing officer.
And
they're
so your position
involved.
Is that trigger does not exist here.
That's correct.
Because the teacher did not ever engage in discussions with the school district to pick or disagree about picking a hearing officer.
That is correct. The teacher wasn't involved at all for more than 2 years. And in fact, it wasn't that the district couldn't agree on a hearing officer with the teacher. It was the district said you have waived or you should be stopped from asserting your right to appeal at this point, and therefore we are not going to engage in a hearing with you. What the teacher should have done at that point was to have sought a mandamus action, a writ of mandamus or something similar, to compel the district to act. That's how you compel government agencies to pursue statutory hearings when, in fact, the agency doesn't believe that it has an obligation to do so. Instead, they misapplied the subsection 4 process for deciding. Basically, it's a tiebreaker decision. In other words, you can't agree on a hearing officer. Who's going to do that? Well, then the presiding judge of the county appoints a hearing officer to then have the hearing. And so it was error for the court to allow that process to turn into essentially a writ of mandamus. That's not what that process is for.
Was that done ex parte, too, in the sense that you, the district, did not have an opportunity to present briefing or argument?
The statutory process doesn't allow briefing or argument or doesn't permit that in this case, Your Honor. And that's a good question, and that's one of the problems of misusing that process to go to the Superior Court like a writ of mandamus.
Well, but didn't you, as I understand it, the lawyer on behalf of the school teacher filed this petition with the presiding judge. You did file some thing. I don't know what you called it, but you did respond to that.
The district did. The district felt that the process shouldn't have been there. The district filed briefing. We were uninvited in doing so. We didn't have a right to do so, and nor were we given an opportunity to do oral argument, although we requested that.
The petition was set without oral argument, correct?
That is correct.
So you responded. And so your argument was there before the presiding judge?
Yes, it was before the presiding judge. That is correct. And as we said, the entire process of going before the presiding judge was in itself error. In other words,
right.
The presiding judge should not have allowed that to be before him under subsection 4 of 310. I think this is an area of the law which is not an area that the courts familiarize themselves very much with. I mean, it's pretty an unusual situation. And I think the court looked at subsection 4 and said, essentially, I get a petition and I appoint a hearing officer. I mean, that's what the procedure establishes. I don't think what the court realized was that it was being misused in the way that it was being used.
Well, but the plain language of the statute doesn't say that.
Well, the plain language of the statute says that subsection 4 is only when the parties cannot agree on a hearing officer. And that wasn't, as you said, Judge Schindler, it wasn't the trigger that it happened. That wasn't why we were there. We were there because the district believed that waiver or estoppel had occurred as a matter of law after more than a year of having abandoned the process.
How about the argument of the teacher that the district hasn't completed its non-renewal process for lack of the district pursuing the process?
Yeah. Judge Rowland, I think that really leads to some absurd results. I understand to do that, the teacher has to mischaracterize what the process is all about. At its core, Section 310 of 28A405 is an opportunity for the teacher to be heard. And it is absurd and leads to, frankly, illogical results that are impractical if the school district, if the law is as the teacher wants it to be, that the school district has an obligation to have an ex parte hearing to finish this process, that you have to have an opportunity to be heard when there's no one to be heard. We went through not one, but the beginning of two different school years having not heard anything from Mr. McLean. And the notion that we have to have an ex parte hearing at the expense of the public taxpayers for a teacher who has obviously abandoned the process and chooses not to be heard is frankly pretty illogical.
What case law are you relying on for your argument that the teacher abandoned or waived his right to a hearing?
Well, I think the notion, Your Honor, of waiver and of estoppel are pretty well recognized. With regards to this particular process, there really isn't much case law around this provision. I don't think this provision really contemplates a teacher who seeks to be heard and then just simply leaves and abandons the process. And the district made repeated attempts to get the teacher involved. I won't go through the whole factual record that's in our briefs, but we had an attorney that was involved who withdrew. We made many efforts to do so, and the teacher essentially abandoned that. And I think the principle of estoppel and waiver, either one, are applicable to this case.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Doug Wortel appearing on behalf of James McLean, the respondent in this case. The court's correct. The first issue here is, did the trial court err in appointing a hearing officer? And I believe that there was no error. The authority of the Superior Court presiding judge in this matter began and ended with the appointment of a hearing officer. Once that occurred, it was the hearing officer who should have decided any and all procedural and substantive issues with regard to the proceeding, including this issue. Clearly, the trial court did not err in appointing Judge Lukens as the hearing officer, and any issues in the case are to be brought to that hearing officer, and that's clear from the procedures set forth in 28A405.310. The issue with regard
well,
to
they could not bring before Judge Lukens the challenge to the authority of the presiding judge under the statute to appoint the hearing officer.
Their issue is that Mr. McLean waited too long to seek the appointment of a hearing officer. It's basically a waiver and estoppel issue.
Well, I think they have two issues. I mean, they are making an issue related to the presiding judge's statutory authority to enter this order, as I understand it.
And there's no authority to support that position. The statute is clear. When the parties
what is clear in the statute that that the presiding judge, without the triggering event of the parties not being able to agree on a hearing officer, having the authority to appoint one?
Well, the district issued a notice of probable cause for non-renewal. An appeal was filed. It doesn't matter why the parties can't agree on the appointment of a hearing officer. It may be that one party simply has not responded to the satisfaction of the other party. It could be any number of reasons, and in fact, when I've litigated these cases, there are many times when one party will simply move forward with a petition. Maybe we've exchanged names, maybe we've received no response from the other side as to people who we've put out there to be hearing officers.
Was there any evidence that Mr. McLean had engaged in discussions with the school district about appointing a hearing officer?
I'm not aware of that. I wasn't counsel at the time, and I don't know what discussions did or did not occur. But the process here requires, in fact, the district to take some initiative once an appeal is filed. In fact, the educator can attend the hearing and need not present any evidence. The educator has the opportunity to cross-examine witnesses. The burden of proof rests with the district. It must come forward, it must convince a hearing officer that the causes stated in the notice for non-renewal are sufficient under the law to do so. And if the district cannot make that burden, then their case must fail. This is no different than filing a lawsuit, receiving an answer from a defendant, and then not doing anything to either note the case for trial or to take other action to pursue it. If there's a waiver, it's equally on the district's shoulders, which would require immediate reinstatement of Mr. McLean.
I'm a little confused. Let me roll you all the way back to the beginning.
Sure.
Let me make sure I understand your position. You're saying that the duty to appoint a hearing officer is triggered not only by a disagreement, but non-response.
Certainly. The statute says...
Where does that say that in the statute?
Well, the statute says that if the parties, if the nominees cannot agree...
Well, how do you define cannot agree?
There isn't any definition within the statute of being unable to agree. It could be a variety of reasons.
So not responding at all to the district's letters and communications, you feel, as a matter of law, triggers the selection process by the presiding judge. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, if after 15 days, because... The parties do not, there's no requirement that they confer. There's no requirement that if attorney A puts out three names that we find objectionable that we have to respond. If the lack of a response means that either party can move forward with the petition to appoint a hearing officer. And the district claims and sits back and says, well, there was no response from Mr. McLean. Whether or not that is in fact the case isn't really in the record here, but the district could have simply said, look, we tried to reach Mr. McLean. We haven't been able to reach an agreement on a hearing officer because there isn't any dialogue. Court, please appoint a hearing officer. And that's what would have happened.
And then the waiver argument could be presented to the hearing officer?
The waiver argument, I suppose, could have been presented to the hearing officer, but as a practical litigation matter, there are frequently times where attorneys may or may not connect, and their clients want them to move forward more expeditiously than what communications allow, and one side will file a petition to appoint a hearing officer, and that's what would occur. The issue here, in part, is the district doesn't want to take any responsibility for its failure to prosecute the claim that it started. It could have filed a petition to have a hearing officer appointed quite some time ago, but it did not. And that is the core issue, because absent a hearing, once an appeal has been filed, there's been no substantive and procedural due process, and Washington law is very clear. The educator has to be reinstated.
Isn't your, the extension of your argument, though, that there could never be a waiver based on lack of action by the teacher? Doesn't matter how long it goes, how many letters the district sends.
Well, I think that there would have to be some notice, certainly. I mean, if there's a case that is pending within the Superior Court system and it is dormant, the court clerk is going to issue a CR 41 notice saying if you parties do not do something, this case will be dismissed. But there was no notice ahead of time.
The district sent a letter that said,
the district,
unless you act on this matter, we're going to consider your claim waived.
The district's a party to the case.
Right.
The district is not in a position to dictate that. They have no legal authority under the law to make that determination. Their obligation is to give notice. Once an appeal is filed, they must present sufficient evidence to a hearing officer to convince that hearing officer that what was alleged in the petition is true and that it justifies discharge. And whether the educator decides to attend the hearing or cross-examine witnesses or present witnesses or briefing, that is the educator's prerogative, as it would be any other litigant in a defense posture. I don't believe that the trial court erred. I think in part this is sort of an end run around the Benson decision, because the district knows that the Washington State Supreme Court has clearly held that while an educator has a right to appeal a hearing officer's decision, the school districts do not. And that is, in fact, the law of this case. And what the district is really attempting to do is have this court legislate into the statute some deadline by which the educator must petition the court for the appointment of a hearing officer, when in fact the statute clearly says either party can do so.
So let me just explore that for a minute. So you wait 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. You're saying the responsibility is on the school district to have timely held a hearing. Is that what you're saying? So it's
and that is in fact what Washington law states.
Which case says that?
There's the Benson decision, which states very clearly, there's Foster. These cases very clearly say that there's no substantive and procedural due process until a hearing is held. And the district, as the initiating party of this proceeding, because of the continuing contract rights that educators possess, once an appeal is filed, must pursue their case to close.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With all due respect to counsel, I believe that that's a mischaracterization of those cases. I believe that certainly if there is a there are situations where school districts have not had hearings or not given a teacher an opportunity or a certificate administrator an opportunity for a hearing, and there has been case law indicating that that is a due process right that the person has, obviously, because there's a property right at stake. However, I think that this, a lot of the confusion that I hear from the court and Judge Lau, your last question, really stems from the entire mischaracterization of this by Mr. McLean in this case. That is, who files the, quote, lawsuit, unquote. The providing the teacher notice that there is sufficient cause for discharge or non-renewal is not the initiation of this process. That is not how this process begins. That is simply a requirement, that is the notice requirement to the teacher that there is sufficient cause for their discharge or non-renewal. The lawsuit, as counsel has characterized it, is really initiated by the teacher, by the certificated employee, who, pursuant to Section 310, requests an appeal of that determination. That's what initiates this suit. It is, at its core, a due process right of the teacher, initiated by the teacher. If it's not initiated by the teacher, then the discharge or non-renewal happens. There is no requirement to go to a hearing officer if there's no initiation of the 310 process by the teacher. Initiated by the teacher, for the teacher, and really an opportunity for that teacher to be heard. And the statutory language, if you look at it, presumes that there is active pursuit of that by the teacher. There are pre-hearing conferences. There's the selection of the hearing officer, and then there's the hearing itself. The notion that that is to be an ex parte process is really impractical and, frankly, absurd. Essentially, what we would, if we'd had an ex parte process, as counsel suggests, Mr. McClain could come back in 3 years and say, gosh, there's nothing in the language of the statute that says you can have an ex parte hearing, therefore I want a hearing. The district would say, no, we had a hearing, and if we accept Mr. McClain's characterization, he simply petitions the Superior Court again, pursuant to subsection 4. Superior Court has a ministerial duty. That's all the Superior Court has, a ministerial duty to appoint a hearing officer when there's, quote, no agreement. We're right back in front of a hearing officer again. This is an endless cycle. Even if we've had the ex parte hearing that Mr. McClain thinks that we should have had, the fact
is... So how would waiver be decided? Would that be decided through a writ of mandamus? Would the teacher file a writ of mandamus to say, I want a hearing, I didn't waive?
That's the appropriate remedy, yes. The court should decide that, not a hearing officer, many of whom, with all due respect to them, the statutory scope of their authority is looking at sufficient cause, and frankly, a lot of them are not attorneys. They're experts in labor, areas of labor law. Thank you.
Thank you.